Our sixth case for this morning is Land v. IBM. Mr. Welke.
Liable to coughs.
Take as much water as you want.
Good morning. Judges. This case arose when it's an injury case. Seth Land was in college, Erlin College, and he one day stripped naked, burned his clothes in the center of the campus, and was obviously hauled in and diagnosed as schizophrenic. During the workup or whatever, it was revealed that he'd been serially and sexually molested by his father, who Mrs. Land had divorced, and the father's father, who had one eye.
Let me get you to focus, Mr. Wilkins. I mean, this is a terrible, terrible set of underlying circumstances, but what we need to know is in what way or under what theory can either IBM or any state official be held liable for it in light of cases like DeShaney, in light of other cases that are tragic facts? Nobody says otherwise, but we're here on a question of legal liability.
Okay. I can go in that direction. IBM had subcontracted virtually all the welfare administration for Medicare for the state. Matter of fact, there were thousands of cases. Fortunately, they never led to this kind of result, but where they screwed everything up in re-eligibilizing and certifying people. And matter of fact, the case is now in a breach of contract case in Indiana federal court somewhere, $1.3 billion alleged damages.
But why does she have a right to recover for her own injuries under this statute?
I'm going there.
Getting there. All right, that's fine.
The IBM was an actor under the subcontract of the only thing they worked everything up, left the final sign-offs to the state agents.
Assuming for the sake of our argument that we have IBM as a state actor, that's only one part of your case, right?
And they were definitely acting on color law because the entire administration...
Counsel, you're still not focusing. We're going to assume that for purposes of the argument. Why does your client have a cause of action under the Medicaid statute? She's not a Medicaid recipient.
Okay.
She's not a recipient of benefits. She's
right.
Not suing for injuries to her son. She's suing
I'm a little hard of hearing, ma'am.
She's not suing for injuries to her son, who was the purported recipient of Medicaid services. She's suing for her own injuries.
Right. She was within the foreseeability circle of this case.
Foreseeability circle.
Well, as you've noticed, I take it if you've read the briefs, Martinez and Gishani. Martinez was released, as you probably checked, he was an irredeemable sexual predator. He was released by a parole board in California. What happened was, several months later, he finds some teenage girl that he is attracted to. He rapes her, he kills her, and they say that there was no...
That's not Gishani.
Huh?
That's not DeShaney. You're describing the wrong case.
All right.
Well, there's no liability there
DeShaney,
either.
That's
Martinez, but there's no liability either way.
Well, let me finish.
All right. So you have to explain to us why this case somehow is doctrinally different.
DeShaney, again, is the kind of thing where investigations weren't made.
We know the facts of DeShaney. Why are yours different?
Ours is different because, unlike those cases where there was a lot of discretionary actions by the state, in this case it was purely discretionary. The case should have been brought in. He had already been declared eligible. These are ministerial actions, and They should have been immediately approved. Instead, they made her get the same driver's licenses five times, the same tax returns five times, come back. Meanwhile, his psychotic medicines wear off. She had him in place, but she needed a Medicaid check. For violent type people, she couldn't afford the $800 a month for the psychotic medicines. She needed the check from. These are simple ministerial actions that had to be taken by the state of Indiana and their contractor. And due to the entire...
Is there a state cause of action against IBM?
We did not pursue it except as a potential tag-along tort in federal court.
Yeah, I thought you had some supplemental claims. The district court relinquished jurisdiction over them. But
they have, but obviously we're on appeal.
But that sounds to me like your answer to Judge Cuddy's question is yes. I mean, I don't...
I mean, no court has decided on the merits whatever the state claim is, right?
Not at this time.
And that may still make IBM liable in a state court, I assume.
At any rate, there are five circuits, including your own, have ruled that 42 U.S. Code 1396 AA8 is the Medicaid Act. A state plan for medical assistance must provide all of individuals wishing to make application for medical assistance on the plan with an opportunity to do so, and that such assistance shall be furnished to reasonable promise.
Well, the Supreme Court has held that, and we have followed them, but as Judge Sykes has pointed out, the private right of action accrues to the person entitled to the benefits, in this instance, the son. And I'm not aware of any case that has expanded standing to sue for violations of this statute out to other people in the family unit or others who are somehow interested in that individual's care, even though we all know, you know, that people have families, we know these things, but the status of the law appears to be it's the recipient, and even that's an implied right of action, which the court has told us to be very cautious about.
She is a custodial parent and guardian.
But she wasn't suing on his behalf. Yes, she was the custodial parent, and she certainly had a right to pursue his rights. But reading her complaint, it appears to be exclusively for her own injuries.
There's no question about it. We are trying to...
So she's not suing in her capacity as custodian. She's suing in her personal capacity.
Personal damages, yes.
It's tragic action.
Right. And we believe that, you know, that we are in a closer arc than Martinez or DeShaney. And that is basically where we're at.
Okay. Well, if that's your argument, I don't know if you want to save rebuttal time or not. It's up to you.
Yeah. And we believe that the Gonzaga rule would allow this in. When Gonzaga University versus Doe, 536 U.S. 273. 1983 allows suit for a federal statute if...
Right, but you didn't make a statutory claim. You made a substantive due process claim and an equal protection claim. And then you didn't file a brief. And so all of these arguments are forfeited. In the first instance, we've been entertaining the merits, but there is a threshold question of forfeiture here. Which bears on the standard of review. You didn't make any of these arguments in response to the motion to dismiss.
Right. The
never raised a statutory claim under the Medicaid Act.
Yeah, but the ruling at the trial level was on the merits, so specifically. We felt we had covered that.
All right. Well, if you'd like to save a minute or so for rebuttal, you are in your rebuttal time now.
Okay. Thank you.
Collins came in with South Korea. See that?
Oh, okay. Sure.
May it please the court, Zach Holmstead on behalf of IBM. The state has also given me their oral argument time. Unless the court prefers otherwise, I plan to address two areas. First, that the district court properly struck Lent's brief below because it was untimely, and the consequences that flow from that decision. And more importantly, the district court examined the merits, properly applied the Rule 12b6 standard, and issued a reasoned opinion dismissing Lent's claims on the merits. The district court's decision was correct under any standard of review, including de novo. At the threshold, Lent's substantive due process claim has been forfeited because she did not meaningfully address that claim, either in her stricken brief below or in her appellate brief. Lent never argued in these briefs that the elements of a substantive due process claim are met, cited no case law in support of that claim, never mentioned DeShaney or Martinez, did not offer the circle of foreseeability argument that has been presented for the first time here at oral argument, and as far as we can tell, did not mention the term substantive due process. Dismissal of that claim should therefore be...
Correct that neither DeShaney nor Martinez shows up in their list of authorities. Yeah.
And dismissal of this claim should be affirmed because Land has made no attempt on appeal to demonstrate that the requirements of plain error review have been met. Moreover, the district court's decision on the merits was correct, even under de novo review. Under the facts alleged in the complaint, this claim falls squarely within the holdings of DeShaney, Martinez against California, and this court's decision in Buchanan Moore against the city of Milwaukee. Lent's procedural due process claim was also properly dismissed because she failed to allege the fundamental elements of such a claim. She did not identify any property rights she owned and was deprived of, and failed to identify any procedure she was entitled to but did not receive. Lent filed this suit individually and on her own behalf only. She does not seek to assert any rights held by her son, Seth. Similarly, Lent failed to plead the basic elements of an equal protection claim. She did not allege that she was a member of any protected class, that she was the victim of intentional discrimination, or that she was treated differently from others similarly situated.
No, apparently part of the problem is that she wasn't treated differently. If the implementation of this IBM system was going so badly in the state of Indiana. So.
And finally, Your Honor, the claims against Ms. Murphy in her individual capacity and against the Secretary of the Indiana Family and Social Services Administration were properly dismissed. First, because there is no allegation that Ms. Murphy knew of or was personally involved in any of the events alleged in the complaint, and that the official capacity claims seek money damages, an improper form of retrospective relief. For these reasons, the district court's decision was correct and should be affirmed under any standard of review. The district court's judgment should be affirmed for the alternative and independent reason that the court properly exercised its discretion to manage its caseload and struck Lent's brief, which was untimely, even after the district court overlooked Lent's first failure to file a timely brief and granted her an extension of 14 days. Because Lent failed to preserve any argument or claim before the district court, all of those claims were forfeited and are subject to, at most, plain error review on appeal. Lent has made no attempt, either in her briefs or at oral argument, to demonstrate that the elements of plain error review are satisfied here. And for this independent reason, the district court's decision should be affirmed in all respects. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Welke?
Just the time of this issue, you can read through the file. There was 12 attorneys have entered their appearances for the defendants. In our case, I'm a one-man shop. I had one staff member who was having a double bypass, and we just couldn't...
But it's still your responsibility to keep up with cases, even just, you know, at the time you learn of that, to either find alternative counsel or to approach the court much sooner than the last minute. You can't assume that last-minute motions will be granted.
Well, we felt, obviously, there was neglect. We feel it was excusable. Second of all, we feel that... A motion to dismiss, as I understand it, is whether the pleadings state a cause of action, and I believe that that is in this analysis the pleadings by this court. And we ask that careful review be made, and we believe that it'll withstand scrutiny.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement. We will move on